Today is December 15th, 2021. 2021 is almost over. That's just amazing. This is episode number 564 of the Apple Context Machine. That's a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Brian Chaffin, editor-in-chief of the Mac Observer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you'd like to comment on or question anything about the show, you can shoot me a note over at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group. And folks, I've got great news because Jeff Gamma is back again.
Oh my God, that really is great news.
It is great news, man.
I'm happy to get to hang out with you yet again. I feel like I'm getting spoiled.
Well, you are. That's for sure. You're super lucky. I am thrilled that you have been doing the show so often with me. It's good times. Good times.
Good times.
Do you know what else is good times, Jeff?
Do tell.
Coinbase, because they're sponsoring this week's show. I'm going to tell you more about them later.
Amazing.
Yeah, amazing. Do you know what else is amazing, Jeff?
The fact that we're actually recording.
That is somewhat amazing, but we were like geeking out for a good, like, we're supposed to be planning the show, and instead we're geeking out over Art Sabers and, to a lesser extent, Ultra Sabers. ArtSabers.com and Ultra Sabers.
Yes. For those of you that don't know what that means, we're looking at websites that that make lightsabers.
Yeah.
Like really nice lightsabers.
Yeah. Like lightsabers that you can smack. That make right. noise and glow. You know, I had, by the way, when I was a kid, would have been in junior high. It would have been like probably 11. 12, because Star Wars came out when I was 10, 76. And had a lightsaber that was an orange plastic flashlight with a plastic tube on the end.
Oh my God, we had almost the same lightsaber.
It probably was the same. It was the 70s, so there wasn't really a lot of
Well, my lightsaber, The flashlight was, I don't know if the handle was actually chrome or like metal, or if it was chromed plastic with like a red screw on piece that held the lens in place.
Okay.
But other than that, yeah, we had the same lightsaber.
Yeah. Well, mine was, it was orange plastic. So your chrome one was way better. Way, way, way more appropriate. The orange plastic didn't make any sense whatsoever, but it was, you know, it glows.
But you work with what you have.
But you work with what you have, right? And, you know, and of course, I wanted to be able to smack things with it, and which, you know, instantaneously, it didn't break off the piece, but it snapped off the piece.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, it wasn't actually constructed to be able to hit things, but it glowed. I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. But what is available today looks like a lightsaber.
Yeah, like the real thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're amazing.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't slice through most matter. It'll slice through the air.
Well, that's matter.
But it won't slice through like a homespun hood.
Oh, well, yeah, and
too soon.
too soon. Yeah. I don't think you can jam it through a solid metal door and have it melt through.
No. But they glow. Currently you can get Art Saber. I think I like Art Sabers better, but Ultra Sabers has a lot more variation.
Mm-hmm.
Like a lot more variation.
Yeah.
Including some that have Crohn's disease.
Yeah. I was debating whether I should respond to that at all, because I was afraid that anything that I said or did would be seen as, you know, confirmation that you're going down the right path. And anyhow,
right? They're but they both seem to be selling the same technology for blades, including I think Ultra Sabers calls theirs the Ultra Pixel, and Art Sabers calls theirs the Neo Pixel. But it's basically lit all the way through. It'll change colors, things like that. It looks great. It's not just lit at the base.
They look really nice. And, you know, so if anyone's still wondering what they should get us for Christmas, well, there you go.
All right. They are the nice ones are hundreds of euros. Ultra Sabers is cheaper. Like I said, I think I like the Art Sabers ones better.
I think I do. There's some really, really nice Art Saber blades.
But they're both nice. Yeah. I mean, they're both nice. If you got a Star Wars geek that you're wanting to get a present for, including, you know, if that's yourself.
Right, because you know what? You're worth it.
You are worth it, man. You are worth it. So anyway, we spent at least probably 30 minutes looking at that stuff.
Oh, easily.
Yeah, we're supposed to be working. So, you know, there's that.
Yeah. Well, you know, but in our defense, you're the boss, and I don't work for you.
These are fair points. These are very fair points. You know what else is a fair point, Jeff?
Brian, please tell me, what is a fair point?
Well, actually, you're going to tell me, because you're going to tell me about universal control, which is coming any day now, if I understand. Did I get that right?
Well, you said the feature name correctly, so good for you. Yeah. You know, so for those of you that may not remember what universal control is, and that's totally okay because it's been a long time, it's the feature in iOS 15 and macOS Monterey that lets you jump between your Mac and your iPad with the same keyboard and mouse and just drag stuff between the devices.
Oh, yeah.
And they showed it off when they gave us the big, hey, here's the new macOS version that's going to be coming this fall, you know, back at WWDC. And then we find out that, well, actually, Universal Control won't be there when Monterey and OS 15 are released. But don't worry, they're coming in the fall. And
fall's over.
Fall's over. And by the time we hit December, I figured if we didn't have it in iOS 15.2, and I didn't know what version of Monterey we'd be looking at that point, so 12.1, that we weren't getting it this year. And when it wasn't in the betas, leading up to these most recent releases, I figured, okay, so Apple is not giving us universal control as promised this year. And then a couple of days ago, I noticed on Apple's product webpage for Monterey, where it has the universal control description, there's a little banner that says coming in 2022.
Well, that is interesting. And for one thing, to be fair, if universal control is essentially magic. So I can see it being difficult to do.
Okay. Well, then that makes me question the demonstration that Apple gave us back at WWDC. I mean, did they even have it working at all, or did they stage the whole demonstration? Yeah, right. Was it just a mock-up?
Right. That I guess we don't know.
No, we don't know. And I'm not accusing Apple of faking it. I'm just questioning, how did they do it back then if they just can't even include the feature now.
Right. That is a good question. Well, which is the thing that I really wanted to talk about. So first of all, when you first mentioned this to me, I was like, that doesn't even ring a bell. I'd completely forgotten about it. And then you're telling me this is all before the show. And you're describing it to me, and I say, oh yeah, now I remember that. Yeah, that was like, that looked really neat. And I could see a lot of people, especially in some professional settings and creative professional settings, where that could be really, really useful. So the aspect that I was most interested in talking about was in that, I mean, you were super bummed when you were telling me that it didn't look like it was coming until 2022. And I was wondering to myself, how were you envisioning that changing how you used your devices enough so that it was still fresh on your mind, you're interested in it, and you're bummed? Right? In other words, like, you know, Apple, I got to keep laying out my preface. Apple showed it to us, and it's like, yeah, that's cool. Right? I personally had forgotten about it since then. And it seems like you had not forgotten about it. And if you had not forgotten about it, it's probably because you were envisioning some kind of use case that would be important to you, and that you were wanting to do that use case. You were wanting to be that use case.
Mm-hmm.
So describe that.
Yeah. Please. Okay, so when they showed the feature, immediately, excuse me, immediately, I thought, holy crap, this changes my workflow for the better. This is the feature that I need today. And that was back at WWDC. And so I've been watching all the betas since WWDC, paying close attention to what features have been tested and then pulled, and Universal Control just hasn't been there. And so, yeah, now here we are. And I'm like, oh, seriously? Now I have to wait to 2022? Or is it even going to come in Monterey? But anyhow, the scenario where I'm going to use this, if it ever comes, is creative. So I do some of the stuff that I record on my Mac, and some of it on my iPhone, and some of it with my iPad, and same thing with, well, actually, if I'm working on graphics, that's probably happening on my Mac, but I'm probably taking content that I'm creating on my iPhone or my iPad, and editing that on my Mac, and then when it's time to put all that stuff together in a video, then that all goes back to my iPad, where I use LumaFusion for all of my video editing. And so my workflow right now to get all of this stuff together involves AirDrop when it works right. A lot of times involves throwing stuff on Dropbox or an iCloud drive, and then waiting for it to upload from one device to the server so that it can download to the other device, and jumping from one device to another. And that also means different keyboards, different pointing devices. And so it's this very kludgy system to use the right tool on the right device to make the thing that I want to make. And there are times where I will sit at my desk and work on stuff on my Mac and then get up, leave my office and go and sit at my dining table and work on my iPad there, and then get up and walk back to my desk and work on my Mac and just kind of do this back and forth thing. And that's just absolutely ridiculous. And Universal Control, if it comes, will fix that. Yeah, I get it. You're totally blown away.
Nonplussed.
Yeah.
Dumbfounded.
Totally dumbfounded. But I mean, can you imagine? I'm sitting here at my desk. My iPad Pro is right here. My Mac is right here. And I record a video segment with the camera that I have you know, here at my desk, and then just drag that video recording from the desktop on my Mac right over onto my iPad. And now I'm working with it in LumaFusion, and I haven't had to get up and walk somewhere else or pull up a different device or wait for stuff to upload and then download. It's just all right there.
Yeah. Yes, it is essentially magic.
Yeah,
and it doesn't, with that in mind, it doesn't surprise me that it's been delayed. I suppose. Maybe it should. I don't know. I get you being bummed at the very least.
Yeah. Okay, so here's the other part of it for me. I'm concerned that Apple is stringing me along because, you know, of course, sometimes it is all about me.
What,
as opposed AirPod? To stringing along all Mac users. Yeah, I'm thinking like the AirPad. Is this another AirPad situation where we are shown a demonstration of something that's really cool and potentially useful for a lot of people, and then it just becomes vaporware?
Right. I think I'd be surprised if that was the case for universal control. I mean, AirPad always, was that what it was called? AirPad? Am I getting the name right?
I don't even remember. I think that's right because it sounds ridiculous.
Yeah, what's it called? Apple's charging pad. I'm looking for it. Canceled. The when it was shown, AirPower. Yes. Yeah. So again, you know. Yeah, AirPower, Jeff, was when it was announced, it very much felt like it was announced and like Apple was just gonna like show Mark Gurman. Like, no, you don't know everything we're doing. How about AirPower? You didn't know that. I mean, that's what it felt like. That it was shown just to to have a surprise.
It did kind of have that feel. It also had a feel like it was last minute, like there was something else that they were going to do and that didn't work. And so they're like the night or a couple nights before, they decided they had to pull the thing and they need to put something there. So they thought, well, let's put this AirPower thing in.
And it was nowhere near ready.
And I bit him. Oh, no.
It's like one of the very few times Apple has ever shown something that wasn't, you know, essentially like done. It's just not shipping yet.
Mm-hmm.
And the end result is they ended up having to cancel it. Universal control doesn't feel that way to me. Universal control feels like the kind of feature that Apple wants to introduce to further bring its devices together and that it's committed to doing so. I don't know that they ever really had a commitment to AirPower.
I can see that. And I agree. I think that universal control is a feature that Apple is committed to. It doesn't mean that at some point they won't say, you know what, this actually doesn't work, or it doesn't work the way we want it to, and we're not comfortable just rolling that out. Which could mean that ultimately this feature ends up being part of the next macOS major release and not as a point update for Monterey.
Yeah, could be. And another, I guess another possibility too, is that Apple releases it, they never promote it, they never push it, no one uses it, and then it eventually gets dropped.
Like is happening with Automator.
Like Automator and, you know, many features in technology. I mean, like back to my Mac, although people did use it. And I know that there was a technical reason why that got dropped, but there have been lots and lots of features that Apple announced never really got behind and then eventually blew off.
Yes. The path behind Apple is littered with the corpses of products and features that Apple just let die.
And that was, I think, even more true when Steve Jobs was still alive and in charge of the company, because the things that currently had his eye always got the resources and attention, including his attention. And when he lost interest, those projects were resource starved and languished. That has happened less under Tim Cook, and the company has grown. Like, you know, I think Steve was a little more maniacally focused on operating as a startup and operating lean, whereas Tim Cook has, it seems at least, has taken the path of operating less lean and actually like having people dedicated to individual products,
which to me seems like a good idea. I mean, for the size and age of the company, I think it's okay for them to, at least in some areas, move beyond the "we're a startup" mentality.
I mean, there are benefits to that startup thing that Steve was so focused on. He remained focused on that even after Apple started making a ton of money. And I get it. Like, being able to make decisions fast and being able to, you know, turn on a dime, being able to abandon things that, you know, needed to be abandoned. There are tons and tons of benefits to that mentality. But at the same time, you get burnout, you get people not having a healthy work-life balance. You're trading that flexibility with an inability to scale up, to do more.
Right. Yes.
And that is a significant trade-off. And I feel like Tim Cook has had a better balance on that. That, you know, Apple still remains lean enough to be flexible and fluid, but has the people to be able to, you know, continue to focus on something when it's not just the tech of the day.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like from the outside.
Yeah, and we've both been around the whole Apple community thing long enough that seems like a pretty astute observation and probably pretty accurate.
Yeah.
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 So anyhow, universal control, it's <All right. laughs> that's the big thing that I was looking forward to in Monterey and iOS 15. Mm-hmm. And so, of course, that's the one thing that doesn't show up. And, you know, also every year I have the same one feature that I ask for in the new version of macOS, and then everything else is just like icing on the cake.
Sure.
And it's stop taking away the focus from whatever window I'm in with some other thing. And to this day, that's still a thing that happens. You know, I'm typing in BB Edit, and some other app wants to give me an alert, and it takes focus. And now I'm typing, but it's not going anywhere because I'm not in BB Edit anymore.
You say that. I also remember experiencing that, and I haven't experienced that in a very long time.
I experienced it yesterday.
Well, I'm wondering, though, if we have something set up differently.
That's possible. Okay, if someone knows of a setting that I can change on my Mac so that nothing else takes the focus away from what I'm actually in, please let me know.
I remember me nuts. So I'm with you.
Oh, it's horrible.
But I haven't experienced it in forever. Now, is it possible because I've somehow gotten used to it? I don't think so. I think that I have not experienced it. And the question is why?
Yeah, maybe you're just lucky.
Mm.
Or maybe I have a setting that's wrong. But yeah, anyhow, the point is...
please write us ACM at MacObserver.com. I'll get it to Jeff.
Yes. Thank you. But yeah, the point is, even with that being my top feature request every single year, I was still more excited about the possibility of having universal control.
Yeah, fair enough.
That was it. They could have released just that feature, and I would have been happy.
Fair enough. You know what makes me happy, Jeff?
I can't wait to hear.
Coinbase, they're sponsoring this week's episode of the Apple Context Machine. I very much appreciate it. Now, here's the deal. Coinbase is an exchange for cryptocurrency. So you can buy, you can sell cryptocurrencies, you can trade one cryptocurrency for another. The thing that Coinbase did better than, like, and probably seemingly sooner than everybody else, is that they realized that consumers who were interested, normal people who were interested in cryptocurrencies, needed a way to be able to get into it that wasn't super technical, that it wasn't hard. And Coinbase has made cryptocurrencies extremely accessible. And I've been a customer of Coinbase's for many, many, many years. Long before they sponsored the show, I am thrilled to have them as a sponsor. If you've been looking to level up your financial portfolio, you know, it's always good to diversify. And that's why you should probably think about maybe cryptocurrency, maybe. And Coinbase is backed by the world's leading investors, and they keep your portfolio safe and they keep it secure while adding crypto into your mix. Coinbase also offers a trusted and easy to use platform. It's, you know, like I said, it's super easy to use, and you can buy, you can sell, you can even spend your cryptocurrency. They support the most popular digital currencies on the market and make them accessible to everyone. They offer portfolio management and protection. They have learning resources. There's a mobile app so you can trade securely and monitor your crypto all in one place. There's millions of people in over 100 countries that trust Coinbase with their digital assets. So whether you're looking to diversify, just get started, or, you know, if you're searching for a better way to access the crypto markets, just start today with Coinbase. One of the things that Coinbase does that I really love is they have these quizzes. They have these quizzes that teach you about new cryptocurrencies and then award you a couple of bucks worth. I mean, it's, you know, you're basically getting paid to learn about new cryptocurrencies, and it's super useful. I have very much enjoyed that feature. And for a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/ACM. Sign up at coinbase.com/ACM for $10 in free Bitcoin. This offer is for a limited time only, so please be sure to sign up today. And one more time, that's coinbase.com/ACM. I appreciate them sponsoring the show. If you have any interest in cryptocurrency, I encourage you to learn more. You should definitely give Coinbase a shot. So, Jeff.
Yes.
Jeff Gannett.
Brian. Cheffin.
That is me. Is this where we talk about art saving? No, we've already done that. App privacy.
Oh.
Did you have something else you wanted to say
app privacy.
About sabers? Lightsabers?
It's just really cool. I want a lightsaber.
Yeah. App privacy. The thing you can do. Mm-hmm. The thing you can do in iOS and iPadOS.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And we got a new feature with the whole app privacy thing in 15.2.
Right. So, all right. So first of all, tell us what it is.
It's the app privacy report. So you've been able to turn on the privacy thing already, but now you can see a report of what's happening with apps and websites and services.
And what do you mean by what's happening with?
Like, what are these different things doing? No, that's a really bad way to describe it. Okay. So, like with the data and sensor stuff, which applications are accessing data over, you know, how I think it's like over the past week, and when did they do it? Where did it happen? And then what is it that they were accessing? So for like example,
what domains are they contacting? What kind of network activity? Or, how much? What network activity there is?
Right. And then like if they're accessing other data on your device, say like with the Messages app, if I send someone a photo through Messages, that will show up in my data access.
That it accessed the Photos app. I'm looking at that right now. And that I'm seeing that Messages accessed my Contacts app and the Photos app,
for instance. Yeah, there you go. Yes. And then you have network activity for apps. And so then that shows you what sort of activity various apps are doing as opposed to various services. And for example, right now I see that over the past 7 days, the Amazon app on my iPhone has 23 different data access activities. Or
seems totes legit.
Totes legit.
That's what the kids say.
Yes. And so I can go in and look, and it shows me which websites were or domains were part of that. And when I look, I mean, this is all Amazon specific stuff. Mm-hmm. So that seems actually legit, because I was in the Amazon app. I was researching stuff, shopping for stuff, whatever. So, okay. So there's that. Then there's another section for website network activity. And so this shows which websites specifically are doing stuff with data. And so like I see there's 6 different times for Reddit, 18 different times for IMDb, 47 for Google, 367 for Facebook. This is all stuff. Well, let's see. What day did 15.2 come out? Basically a week now.
Okay. And because those numbers mean radically different things if it's for the last year or the last 5 minutes.
Right. And we got 15.2 on Monday. Yeah. Okay. So as we record, 3 days. And Facebook is the big one on that list.
I mean, by the time people listen and the show's out, you mean like 3 weeks.
Right. Right. Wink.
All right. So I want to stress something Jeff said. You actually have to turn this on, and it doesn't start collecting this data, or at least seemingly doesn't start collecting this data until you turn it on. Tell us where to turn it on.
Go to settings on your iPhone or iPad, and then go to privacy.
Okay.
And scroll down to the bottom of the privacy settings, and you'll see an option for app privacy report. Tap that, and then you can turn on the report.
Yeah, it says like turn on or something to that effect. And when you first turn it on, you won't actually see anything, but you know, leave the settings app, go open another app, and then come back, and you'll be seeing data being populated.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, one fun thing,
it's really interesting. Go ahead.
One fun thing is I don't have Facebook installed on my iPad.
I do not have Facebook installed on any of my devices either.
Now, how many calls to Facebook.com do you have on your report?
Okay. So Facebook.com has 367 calls. And
have you visited it on, have you personally pulled up Facebook.com in a browser on that device?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. So I have, but the thing is, it's just tracking everything that I'm doing.
Right. And And a lot of apps have some Facebook API or another utilized in their, you know, it's probably tracking related, but and not to mention all the websites that you might be visiting on your mobile device that have Facebook tracking embedded in them somehow too. You will possibly be surprised at how many calls are going out to Facebook on your device if you enable this report.
Yeah, you'll be surprised. And in my case, part of this, I'm sure, is coming from the fact that I'm using If This Then That to take content that I post on Instagram and have it post as a unique new post on Twitter, as opposed to just doing the link up thing where you get an Instagram link on a Twitter post.
Right.
Yeah. So to use the API that allows that to happen, it's a Facebook API, and Facebook owns Instagram, and they changed, I think it was in the fall this year, how the API works. So you have to go into your Facebook settings and enable offsite tracking. If that's turned off, then the API doesn't work.
Of course, it does not work.
Yeah, and that's just a really crappy, crappy move on Facebook's part.
Yeah, you know, Facebook does a lot of crappy things. You can talk about that at macobserver.com/contextmachine. That'll take you to our Facebook group.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, Facebook. Facebook. Here is a thing about this report, like, and I'm contrasting it to, say, Little Snitch. Little Snitch is like a geek's, you know, Uber toolkit for monitoring your network traffic, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it is, most people find it burdensome to use, to run.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's snitching on everything, because everything is problematic. And this is on a Mac. But here's the thing with this app privacy report. Apple is giving us this data in a way that is digestible. This report makes sense. You can see what is going on. I don't know that you're going to know what to do about it. You might want to end up, I don't know, deleting some apps because you're seeing something that you don't like. But whether or not you do anything with the information, this information is being presented in a way that makes sense. And that's something, because network activity is really complicated and complex.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. You know, based on what's in this report, I'm looking at my IMDb data.
Yeah. Hold on. You can, most of the things that are on this first level of reports, for instance, in app network activity, you can tap on that app's entry and then see greater detail about what's there. That's what you're talking about.
Right.
Okay.
Right. And so that's what I'm doing. So imdb.com, I go there because I see an actor in a show and my first thought is, what else have I seen them in? So I go to IMDb and find out. Okay. So over the past, 3 days, 18 incidents of website network activity related to imdb.com. So I tap on that. And the first thing I see is fls-na.amazon.com. All right. Well, based on that and the other URLs that I'm seeing show up in here, I think it's a pretty safe bet that IMDb is using AWS, Amazon Web Services, for at least part of their hosting.
IMDb?
Oh, maybe they did.
Amazon buys IMDb. Let's see here.
And if they did, then of course they're using Amazon Web Services. Yeah.
Oh, they bought it in,
well, there you go,
1998.
Really? Okay, so it's been long enough ago that I completely forgot.
Yeah, I somehow completely forgot about that too. Who knew?
Yeah. Yeah, but there you go. I mean, it makes sense. I'm looking at these URLs, and my first thought was, yeah, they're using Amazon Web Services.
Right. That makes sense. I briefly, for the purposes of this discussion, I opened the news app. I actually open the news app all the time, but I hadn't since I turned on the report. I turned on the report, I opened the news app, and immediately closed it. And there were some, what am I seeing here? 20 different calls. Most of them are to some apple.com domain where it's putting this stuff down. Actually, there's Washington Post. Checking my subscription to the Post. Weatherdata.apple.com. Interesting. There's a Google call. There's an iCloud call. There's an Apple call. Now, I didn't actually open any specific articles or anything. But anyway, that's just an example. It was like open the app, 20 calls. I open the app, close the app immediately. 20 calls. The stuff's complex.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Yeah. Looking at this data, it's interesting because I have a couple tile trackers and I knew that there was regular activity going on with my phone and the tile trackers. Totally makes sense. You know, same thing for AirTags. And the tile trackers, the tile app or tile trackers, they're constantly pinging with my phone. And when I go and look to see what sort of activity is happening with AirTag, you know, I'm looking at the whole data and sensor access list. I don't even see my AirTag show up.
Huh.
But the tiles are just like constantly pinging. Huh. And yeah, so whatever Apple's doing with AirTag, because you know, if I leave one of my AirTags behind somewhere, like, you know, like my computer bag, if I set it down somewhere and walk away, I get the notification. So whatever Apple's doing, it doesn't need to access data and sensors in a way that it's showing up. And I can't imagine that they're hiding their own data, that because there's so much Apple stuff that's showing up in here already.
Right.
Why would they choose to hide that?
You're seeing so much, it doesn't make any sense that they would be holding anything back.
Right.
Right. I agree with that.
Yeah. I can tell you the last time that there was data and sensor transfer between my Apple Watch and my iPhone. I mean, it's just right in here.
Sure. Sure. So that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. Well, it is an interesting feature. It is, I'm guessing that most people won't bother with it. And even the most people who do bother with it probably won't do anything with the information. But for those who were interested, it's there.
We did.
Yeah. And I think that I think it's very important that Apple has made this so easy to understand, because demystifying that, I mean, like, one of the things that the advertising world has counted on is for things to just be too complicated for us to bother with when it comes to, you know, surveillance capitalism, and demystifying what's happening behind the scenes is key to making it possible for people to actually care about this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's important.
And so one thing I don't know is if turning that feature on one device turns it on everywhere.
Well,
we're about to find out.
It just
so happens that my iPad Pro is handy.
I mean, I can't actually find my iPhone, so maybe we won't find out.
Let's see.
Where's my iPhone?
Privacy at Privacy Report. Nope, it's per device.
Per device, okay. Which makes sense. It should be per device because that data should also be being collected. per device, not by iCloud.
Yep. Totally makes sense. And now we know for sure.
Right. And it's not available on the Mac yet, right?
Well, you know, if only there was a way for us to check.
Yes, or some way to have found out before we did the show.
Security and privacy.
Yeah, yeah, security and privacy. Could fill that
privacy.
Board. Yeah. Yeah. Nope.
I'm not seeing any. Look under general. No.
Nope.
I don't think there's anything here. So, nope, it looks like, at least for now, unless it is hiding somewhere else.
Oh, wait, did I actually update? No, I have an update. I have 12.1, so I wouldn't know.
Well, then you have updated, because that's the current version of Monterey.
No, no, no.
That's the post-update version. Oh, you haven't done the update.
Correct. So I wouldn't
got it. Know. Right. And I'm looking on my Mac where 12.1 is installed. And in security and privacy under the privacy tab, I don't see anything about
I don't think reports. It's for the Mac yet. And I hope that it comes.
Yeah, I hope so too, because it's not like the only place I'm online is on my iPhone or iPad.
Right. I agree with that. I do agree with that. Like my agreement matters. I don't know why I said that. Okay, now no one will know that I'm a weirdo, that I say stupid things.
Oh my God, that's lucky.
Yeah,
that was really close.
Right. All right, Jeff, we're going to do a couple things. The first thing that we're going to do is this. Then I'm going to say that is this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add a question, you can write me at macobserver.com. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boob, recorded just for TMO. Jeff, tell us where our listeners can find you.
Well, you can find me tied up in the Context Machine Studios. Send help, please. Also, Jay Gamut on Twitter and Instagram, youtube.com/JayGamut for my videos, and Thursdays on The Big Show, Fridays on The Mac Show. I mentioned it last time I was on, so I'll mention it again. Patreon and Buy Me a Coffee. I'm Jay Gamut on both of those, too.
Sweet. You know, I think I did not actually add those to the show notes. So send me those links as a text to remind me.
Okay, and I can do that.
I will get those added to the show notes. Let's see here. So also, while we're here, don't forget that for a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/ACM. It's coinbase.com/ACM for $10 in free Bitcoin. I appreciate them sponsoring this week's show. And